the Age of Vision radio show with your host, Lonnie Clark. We stand together and accept that we now live in a world transformed by Fukushima. From 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time here on UCY.TV radio, we relentlessly engage every ear that listens. We expose and confront the complete lack of accountability for the nuclear industry. Consider social engineering programs who view our bodies, minds, and souls as assets on a balance sheet. We discuss vital current issues, interview activists, and engage our audience in an effort to allow all voices to be heard. The Age of Vision radio show creates a venue that all will choose. We encourage our listeners to reclaim their power and their courage to take action and save our planet from the ravages of greed and indifference. Our actions matter. Every voice matters. We remind our listeners that happiness is resistance. Love is greater than fear.
Good morning, UCY.TV radio listeners. This is Lonnie Clark with the Age of Vision radio show. Today is March 20th, 2018. It is 8 o'clock in the morning here on the West Coast, and it is still gray outside, although we're hoping for a little bit of sun today. Thank you for joining us. I really want to thank KEPW out of Eugene, Oregon, who carries our station and our radio show, and Libby Halevy's show, Nuclear Hot Seat. So thanks so much. We really appreciate having our market expanded. And on that vein, I'd like to thank our listeners who actually share this radio show with your friends and family to help us grow. Today we have back with us a friend of our show, Erica Dugan, who is basically a victim of the fracking industry, to be honest. Her family, she's a mom who's been speaking out and taking action on her own behalf because she hasn't been able to find it. So thank you, Erica, for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Lonnie.
Yeah, so why don't you, for those listeners who may not have heard you before, can you give like a quick brief synopsis of what brought us together, of the actions that have happened in your life that moved you from being a successful journalist, a successful woman and a mom, into being a person who's, you know, has to really devote most of your time to taking care of your family and dealing with these medical issues and legal issues that you've been thrust into?
Sure. Basically, we moved from the city of Tulsa to a suburb of Tulsa that had been growing in the past few years, and traded our lower priced city home and our private school for a public school district that we were interested in. And because we as parents grew up in a public school district, and just the community feel that was more like what we had when we were growing up. And we even had a friend who we would live next door to that we grew up with, and their kids and our kids would play together, play outside, use the sidewalks, use the ponds, and, you know, ride our bikes. That's how we grew up, and we wanted that community for our children. And so we moved to it. And after we moved, our oldest daughter got very sick and couldn't get better. And then our son started having some illness tendencies that we were like, is he faking? Because he's trying to be like her. And we figured out, no, he wasn't. And we had a third child who was born having problems with illness and had over 20 pneumonias before age two. And our doctors with us, our friends in the community, our next door neighbor who was a pediatrician, everyone and his family were all like, what is going on? You know, something is going on. This is weird. And people in the community knew things were strange and that we had excessive things going on, but no one really knew why, what, when, where, how. And so we didn't want to pursue that. We just wanted to pursue healing. And our daughter had become so emaciated with illness, and she was even, you know, accused of being anorexic, and she was only 8 years old, and she was an independent girl who didn't care about looks at that time, like you do when you're like 12 or 13, and she wasn't prematurely entering that. So, you know, we knew that those things weren't right, but we pursued it anyway to make sure we weren't just not seeing something, and even the counselors were telling us, no, this is something physical going on. This is not a nervosa, anorexia, mental situation, not behavioral, not lifestyle. This is a real physical thing, and you have to fight for your children and find out what's going on. And so, you know, given that charge is very weighing and emotional when you don't know what to do next and you're trusting the professionals. And then we saw, you know, this group of professionals standing next to us, fighting for us. And as we learned more and more truth, we saw a divide between the professionals that were standing by us and the other ones that were just acting strange to us, doing bad things, not letting us find the answers that we were very close to. So we just had to keep continuing on that journey because of the excessive illness that was continuing. And it brought us to learning that we had two chemicals in our city water that were basically poisoning us. And that brought us to learning that those chemicals were used to remove industry chemicals that had purposely been put in the water as a part of an industry process. And that's what the experts told us had happened to us all. And then, of course, we watched the fallout of what's happening also to our friends and neighbors, and we continue to watch premature deaths occur. We continue to watch, you know, another person come down with these tumors, and we know it's from their exposure in whatever year. And so, you know, we continue to watch how that materializes and falls out. And I think the biggest thing we've learned in this journey is that environmental illness and environmental exposure is at a lot of the heart of, you know, the widespread illness that's come across our country, this health crisis that we've entered. And there's this belief and corruption that surrounds it and makes like a bubble around it. There are people who believe in that as the source and the cause, and there are people who don't. And there are those who know that it's the source and the cause, but that build that bubble around it too, to try to like protect you from getting to the heart of that, for many reasons, because I mean, it could be dangerous for a country to just know that all at once and try to deal with it all at once. It could be dangerous for us to stop those industry processes, and, you know, it would cancel out services and products that we need to live. So, I mean, there are lots of reasons why the corruption surrounds it, but there's also just the good old bad reason of people don't want to pay for their mistakes.
I would say it's actually that they don't want to stop making money and they don't want to assume responsibility, because I personally believe that's a false narrative. If we stop these chemicals, we'd have to stop the production of these vital, necessary elements. I think that's a false statement. I mean, that's what we've been sold, that we need this. But the reality is, prior to Dick Cheney's secret signing on the 2008 budget, which happened in 07, where he put in there the secret thing about fracking, they allowed fracking and allowed a secret element and nobody can know what it is. I mean, we instead of doing solar and wind power in this country, we're doing oil and nuclear, the two most harmful things. So there's actually suppressing alternative energy that is just as viable and could provide us with just as much. But because it's not as profitable, we suffer. You were right that we suffer in this country about corruption. And if corruption means praying to the money god, I guess that's what it is, because everything is couched in terms of money. That's why your journey to get equitability for the medical effects that have happened to you, it's long, because there's no respect for that. You know, I want to ask you a question. You were talking about how you were watching your neighbors have many of the same illnesses and problems. Were any of them aware of what was going on with the medical condition or anything like that? Do you know what I mean? Were they aware that it came from fracking, or were they just thinking, God, I'm just getting sick and sick and sick?
I think they were just thinking, gosh, I'm just getting sick and sick and sick. And I know, you know, Mary is too. What's the deal? Maybe it's this climate change. Maybe it is what that lady found out about the water. But, you know, that's how it's referenced, you know, what the lady found out about the water, not that the chemical was put into the water because there was industry processes in it and they purposely put the chemical in there and it got it too high a level. Not that they bought the water from another community, shipped it through the lines with the holes in it. You know, that's not the narrative that makes it into the community. The narrative is, oh, everyone's sick. Oh, there's just a lot going on. Oh, and now the new narrative is, the opioids have made everyone sick.
Right. Don't you love that?
New narrative. But,
I mean, it is really a good whipping boy. Blame the medical. Although the medical industry has a good handle in helping all those people become addicted because, again, it's the money god. Those doctors got paid bonuses for giving those prescriptions.
Well, and a lot of people came in with autoimmune type things where they're basically their body's attacking its tissue. And what is it attacking that's in their body's tissue? We're not addressing that. And then they end
up. Or why do they have it? You know, we do know that chemical and nuclear pollution causes. I mean, one of the first things with nuclear pollution is autoimmune deficiency. That's one of the first things you see. And diabetes. And what do we have? An explosion of diabetes and autoimmune deficiencies. I mean, yeah. Same thing with the chemical industry. The chemical industry is just as horrendous as you are living through. I'm stunned that more people are not willing to stand up like you are. I mean, more of
I think there is a level of being misled. There is. And when you're misled by your leaders, and you're misled by your doctors and even a lawyer that you try to speak with, that when you know something's wrong and you're still misled, then, you know, it kind of tends to make you feel like you're the one who's wrong. As an example, when the city of Broken Arrow was buying water from another community and shipping it through the water lines in one of the hotter months, one of the drought months, where if you have holes in your water line, you're probably going to lose more that month because, you know, the ground around it is dry, and so it's going to steep up more when it's running through the line or running out. So basically those months, as I've been able to learn this whole story of really what was going on, I'm able to look back on that. At the time, they raised our water bills. In our neighborhood, for example, we had generally been paying $150 to $200 a month in a summer month for your water bill, if you're running your sprinklers, refilling a little bit of your pool, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
That was generally your water bill in that summer month. Well, all of a sudden, everybody got their water bills that month, and it was like $480, wow. $430. And we're all like, what in the world? We don't just, you know,
yeah,
life is tough. Everybody doesn't have this. And people in smaller homes, even in a little bit more impoverished communities, were also getting, like, they gave it to everybody across the board, at least, I guess. But theirs were going from, you know, $50 to $150.
Wow.
And everyone began to speak up and go to the media source where it's like in your corner, and several people at once came to them and showed them their water bills and said, hey, look at my water bills for the last 3 years in this month. Now look at this one. And there was just so much fact that the media had to come out and say, what's going on? Of course, we never got the story. We never knew they were buying our water from another source. If they had given that to us, they buried it somewhere where no one ever read it, you know. And we didn't know really why all of a sudden they decided to give us this big bill. And I, you know, I still don't have that as a fact from the city. I'm just leading to that, assuming that from all that I've learned and from what they have admitted, that they were losing the water and how that would work in a hot, dry summer month. So this is how we're misled. The people would call up the water company and say, how did you send me this bill for $430? Oh, well, we know that you have a pool and you must have refilled your pool. You did it. So this is how we're
misled. Wow.
We're blamed. And this is what happens to you in medicine. I've talked about this before. Like, you go in and you know you exercise. You know you're eating well. And then they just tell you you've gained 20, 30 pounds because you're overeating and you don't exercise. You just sit on the couch all the time, you know.
So right.
It's that whole misleading blame thing. And
blame the victim. It's kind of about blaming the victim.
And part of that is corruption. And part of that is they don't know what to do or what to tell you. And it's their job to, they're an expert, so they have to tell you something.
I think you're right on that. I think that's a very accurate statement. I think they really, honestly, that's part of what keeps people going, okay, well, let's just tell them something. Because we can't tell them the truth. Because if they told them the truth, they'd be pitchforks. Because people would be like, what? And so I think it leads into this whole atmosphere of, let's just believe what industry is telling us. Let's just believe that they have a solution down the road.
Yeah, and the thing I keep fighting for is at least give our health providers a health response. You know, if we find this weird virus is doing all this things to people, then we make a response. We say, this is called Ebola, and this is what to look for, and this is what you do. And
you know what, Erica, that's a breakthrough statement. That's actually a breakthrough statement. Because really, one of the things that we as activists really want, we want the medical industry to be free to say, yes, you've been poisoned by these chemicals, and no, you're not going to be allowed to sue them because it's part of what we're accepting, but this is how we can deal with your medical thing. Yes, your problems are caused by the nuclear industry, nuclear pollution being in this area, and no, you can't sue them, and no, they're not going away, but let's deal with your medical stuff. Because the fact is, they're not closing down the nuclear industry. They're not closing down the oil industry and the fracking industry. They're going to use that till every drop is used up, period. No matter what, till the last human falls dead on this planet, I think. But I think that that is an instrumental, a really succinct point to just say, we want our doctors to be able to say the truth. How hard is that?
Give us a health response. If they can't say the truth because you can't 100% say it comes from this one or that one or blah, blah, at least give them a health response so they know, you know, so they can quit blaming us or quit blaming a new thing, like the opiates that were given for the pain that
are
not,
now the cause of it all.
Like, the pain was not the diagnosis. We're ignoring that still. The pain was a side effect.
Right, right, right.
Not being treated.
Right, and a lot of really it is, like, autoimmune deficiencies or female problems or, you know, back issues or kidney. A lot of back pain is caused by kidney and internal organs. I mean, it's really, you're right about that. That's a very succinct point, because that's kind of what drove you into taking legal action, isn't it? Because you couldn't get medical stuff.
Yeah, we had diagnoses. We know we have an immune deficiency, which we are not able to make certain cells from our bone marrow that can't fight off things that come into our body. And we have to have antibiotics. We don't qualify for that group of antibiotic resistant people. If you don't give us antibiotics, you let a low level of infection stay in their body. And like in my 12-year-old child right now, they have done that to her. They have said, well, we're just not going to let her have antibiotics. Maybe it's her antibiotics that made her sick. Maybe the chemicals in the antibiotics are bad for her. No, that's not what my doctors have said. My doctors have said, we've diagnosed this. She is deficient in these certain areas of her immune system. She's not going to heal from that. It comes from her bone marrow. It's damaged. Her B cells are damaged, you know. And now we have this other corrupt group, or the non-believers, as we'll call them in our little bubble, and they've come against the doctors who have dug in and found what's really wrong. And then they found we also have an autoimmune condition where, like, some of the chemicals and bad things that have gotten into the tissue, there's this other healthy part of our immune system that is trying to fight that bad that's in the tissue. So we've got, like, you know, a couple of wars going on inside our own, our, like, one little body, one little child's body, where you're not making the things to get out the bad that you need to get out. And then you're making stupid things basically to go and attack the things that are in there. Our bodies are really wonderful and amazing, and they try to do, you know, wonderful jobs. But when there's so much bad that's been brought into them, those jobs are, you know, dangerous to our existence. And even within our own body, and that's what our experts have told us. So, but then we've got these non-believers, these corrupt ones, and they want to penalize us for what we've found. And they've, you know, basically done all kinds of horrific things to us. And in her instance, they've left her with this low level of infection. And you can see, like, I could show you a picture of her right now, how her neck has changed, how the bone inside the back of her head is swollen. I believe it's called, like, a mastoid infection. I don't know. That the bone that's in the back of her head has basically got infection in it now. And I'm still not able to get it treated until I can get through our court case. And then...
Are you guys able to go see an alternative care healer, like somebody who understands how to heal the body? Do you guys have access?
Well, we don't have access to that through our insurance. Sometimes
but,
you can.
But do you have one in your community? Because a lot of times when you work with, when you find someone and you guys are without funds, and especially if it's a child, they'll often do it for like $5 a visit. $10 a visit if you can't afford it. I'm just going to put that out there for you. I don't know. I mean, I personally, as we've spoken many times, do not believe that the AMA understands health and healing. They're not out to cure. They're out to treat. And so I think we need, you know, there is a coalition for alternative healing that the government is, there's a panel being formed inside the government that's saying, hey, we need to start to be able to pay for chiropractics and things that actually, because they are getting just as good results as the AMA, if not better. And in this instance with autoimmune deficiencies, I'm going to tell you there are some things that if you found someone. I mean, I'm just putting it out there. I know I was very hesitant to start in the alternative healing myself when I first was introduced to it. I thought it was mostly quackery. And there are some quacks, just like there's some quack doctors. But with the things you're telling me, I feel compelled to just put that out there. And to other people who have these diseases that you just don't get any type of respite or real answers. I know that's what I went through. I was 37, and they wanted to put me on Prozac because they couldn't figure out why I was having these things that was wrong with me. I should have been healthy, and I wasn't. And they wanted to put me on Prozac to calm me down, and I actually got healed. Yes, I had really early onset arthritis. My hands were so, like, my left arm, I could barely raise it when I was a young woman. Between 30 and 37, I did everything with my right arm. I was really strong and a lot. I could lift with my left arm, but I could not lift it above my shoulder. I mean, I couldn't raise my arms above my head. I was like older. It was really bizarre, and it was only in a few spots of my body, and the rest of me was perfectly fine.
So, well, I can tell you when we saw the first few rounds of specialists with our oldest daughter, and we saw that she still couldn't eat. And what we did later find out from that, just to kind of update you, is she had a pneumonia.
Wow.
Wasn't being treated.
Wow.
And she just was left to live with it because she didn't have the fevers and the...
Right. That's what happens with
the
pneumonia.
The classic presentation...
Sticky.
Yeah, it didn't have the classic presentation that they like to see. She didn't meet the protocols, so she had to go on, you know, living that way with it for a while, and we had to figure out how to keep her eating, and someone brought us to...
Did she megadose vitamin C? Did she megadose vitamin C? No, that was way before you understood about that, because you can get well from pneumonia by megadosing vitamin C. It's a weird thing.
Yeah, at that time, we didn't know that.
So she just had to live for weeks, 2 to 3 weeks, knowing that she had it. Just rest.
No, we didn't know. She had been in the hospital, and they gave her fluid. They gave her a feeding tube, and they sent her home. And they never found it. And we struggled to feed her for months. And the school worked with us. She had a wonderful teacher at the time, who they worked really well with us, and we just kept trying to keep her functioning because she wanted to keep functioning. And we basically, in our state, you cannot be licensed as a naturopath in our state. And some families who were very concerned about what they were seeing physically change in her, that she was losing muscle, that she was just emaciating, and they knew it wasn't anything we were doing to her. They stepped up and told us about this naturopath that was in the south part of our town that had been she was licensed in another state, and she had a couple of alternative care providers with her, and we took our daughter to them, and they did this test on her hand with like a metal wand, and we were really like, wow, this is really strange. And they came up with this test that showed what organs and what systems in her body were feeling the stress of what was going on with her body. And they gave us that report, and we're just like, okay, now what do we do with this? But it did kind of make our doctors start looking again and realize that we were going to keep fighting for an answer, so they had to find an answer. So in our community, when you go to someone like that, it just puts pressure on the system. But I can tell you that one test cost me $400.
Wow.
And that's in Oklahoma, our income is less than other states. That's a lot of money for an average person.
That's a lot of money, I think, across the states for one test from a naturopath. I mean, that's pretty. And you know why? Because there's nobody in your state. If you guys had competition, the fees would be much less.
Right, and so no one's really allowed to go to these providers, but they go, and they have to pay a lot because these providers don't have money from the insurance pool. So you're right. I mean, there is something with that, and I've noticed our chiropractors have fought for that a little bit more, but here, even going to the chiropractors kind of become, you know, a little bit of, there's, you know, bad patient belief on that too, because the same thing's happening with the chiropractor that's been happening to our doctors, where the insurance dictates what you can or cannot do. And so even a chiropractor's like, all my patients can have this many appointments and this is what we do. It's just put everybody in the box, and that no one is a box. We all have different cells. When you've been poisoned, it manifests differently, even in your own home with people who are related who have similar genetics.
That's why we need universal health care. That's why we need universal health. We need Medicare for all, period. And if you want to pay for your better insurance, go for it. But we need Medicare for all so that we just can go to a... That's what this coalition, what was the name of it? I had the website up, actually. Let me go to it. But if there's a coalition, you can call your congressman. In fact, I would encourage everyone to go. We were talking about this yesterday. It's called homeopathychoice.org, and she has two letters there asking her doctor, you know, ask your senators to sign on to defund this effort, because they're attempting to make alternative care illegal, essentially. They want to take away homeopathy. They want to put on different... They're trying to get language through that says... the FDA should only approve of known methods. So who approves of those known methods? We've had a whole standard since the early 60s, and they want to just completely change it and make it much more arbitrary, is essentially what's happened. So homeopathychoice.org, you just click on, find your senator, find your congressman, send them a letter. But it's that same thing. Like in your state, it's almost impossible for you to find good alternative care that will heal you without pharmaceutical drugs or medical intervention, where you have to go to a hospital and get surgery or any of that stuff. There are solutions.
Well, yeah, for instance, I had to have a thyroidectomy, and where they remove your thyroid, and your thyroid makes hormones for your body. And that make it function, to make your cells function. So you have to replace those hormones if you're going to have to lose that organ.
That's right.
And basically, I followed. It was very scary for me to go through that. I didn't know anybody who had ever been through that. So I found this support group on Facebook. It's a thyroidectomy group. And I followed them. And it was really this wonderful group to find, even though it was kind of scary at first because people show you their incisions, and I didn't really like that.
Yeah.
But I came to learn that all of that seems weird is really wonderful when you're going through that, because it gave me access to people all over the U.S. Even some of them were in Canada. Now there's some on there that are in other countries.
Mm.
And we talk about, you know, what's working for us, what's happening to us, if they know why this is happening, because our doctor doesn't know.
Does anybody when did you have to have your thyroid out? What year was that?
That was 2014.
Right. So you want me to tell you what my response to that is? It's Fukushima. We got bombarded in 2011 with very high levels of cesium. I think it's cesium-137 goes right to your thyroid. Or iodine, one of those things that came directly from Fukushima. They told us, and when I first got engaged in this in 2012, doctors were saying in 2013, 15 through 15, we would see women and children with having to get that. It would be very interesting if you guys could get a plot chart going just with when did you discover your illness? At what year? And I can guarantee you in your little group, your plot chart would be between 2011 and 2015 mostly. It would be stunning to see what would happen. This is where the nuclear deniers, just like, you know, how we could, it's so far-fetched to believe, but it's probably true. Because, honestly, you were set up because you were living in a weaker environment anyways with all the chemicals that had been depleting your system and your immune system. And you got hit with high levels. I mean, the plume, the radioactive plume that came across the United States the first 2 weeks after Fukushima was stunningly strong, way stronger than what we got hit with Chernobyl, way, way, way stronger. And we didn't feel it, taste it, or heal it. That was the initial plume. And then it just spewed out. I mean, they built covers around those buildings to keep them from spewing out, but it took about 2.5 years. So, anyways, that's just a little question. It'd be interesting if you could put up a plot chart on that group and see what would happen. Guarantee it would be like...
And the civil action book and movie, do you remember that? And that's basically how they lost, is all this group of lawyers just kept bringing up, oh, well, there's these other chemicals that you could have been exposed to. There's this thing that happened that you could have been exposed to. And that's how they lost. I mean, it was a little more complex than that, but that's how they lost. And those families went on to just lose their children. They were, you know, fighting, hoping for their medical, and they ended up losing their children. So, and that was in Woburn, Massachusetts. That's a real story. But what that is actually is called multiple chemical sensitivity. So you were exposed by the high levels that you can prove from, say, your water source the first time. And then, like you're saying, then this wave of something comes through and it maybe wouldn't have naturally bothered you so much or made you just think you had, you know, a little cold or something. But since you have that exposure from before, you become sensitive and have this multiple chemical sensitivity, where other things that, you know, it's how my allergy doctor explained many, many years ago to me. You have a cup and something keeps filling your cup up, and at one point your cup just runs over with the bad things, not, you know, the good things. And when your cup gets so full, it just keeps pouring out the top. And that's what's happened, is, you know, you have this big thing that happened that exposed you, that is worthy of a lawsuit and was negligent and was a bad thing, because prior to that, you weren't so sensitive to all these things. And so that's kind of the difference in how you know you have a legal action versus how you're just the average person. If that kind of helps you to understand how those things fall into order.
Excuse me, I had the thing off.
That's okay.
That is how they want it to do. That is how, you know, they want us to think that it's all just falling in order. But I think we're at this point where, as adults, we have a responsibility to, like, demand the truth.
Yeah.
I mean, it's only harming everyone, including their own children. I mean, this is the hardest part, when we realize that really the money god is all that matters here. Because they know they're harming their own children. I mean, your own senators in your state are living by the same rules. Your congressmen, all your representatives.
Yeah.
They're living in the same communities.
Yeah, I know for a fact that Scott Pruitt, who moved to be the head of the EPA and has a controversial relationship with our country, his family... some of them lived in our community. So I'm just thinking they have to be affected in some way. So yeah, it is affecting many. And that's why I said there's these layers of belief and layers of corruption surrounding that. And we have to have a health response. We have to, step up. And I keep being like a hen, pecking at this woman who I know is in charge of that health response, and she's had to contact me. and she hasn't been able to do her job. And I just keep, every time something flares up again with our community, I email her. And I say, I'm here to stand in front of you again with my email sign and let you know this is happening and let you know you still haven't given our doctors a health response. And I just keep doing that to her because it's her job and she's not able to do it. She works for the CDC.
And so why has she said she can't do it?
Yes. She wants to do it. And she's done some things that she's been able to find loopholes so that she can do, I believe.
What keeps her from doing it? What are there laws on the books? Like, what's the deal? Why isn't she allowed to do her job?
In our case, it's that state situation where I even hooked her up with a new epidemiologist who strangely is a veterinarian and not a doctor. And but our animals are being affected too, so that's fine. But hooked her up with the epidemiologist, and they wouldn't let her move forward, basically, is my understanding. And so it's the state. And she says that the states have to do it. The states have to let us do it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's my state. And
mm-hmm.
my
and who
Oklahoma.
At the state? But so is it the medical board that won't let her do it? The state medical board?
No, it's the health department. It's who it is.
And so who runs that health department? Have you guys asked the health department
the
why
governor.
They don't allow it?
Governor has, Mary Fallon, one of the defendants in our lawsuit. Governor Mary Fallon. It's similar to the governor.
One of the defendants in your lawsuit. Okay, yeah. Then. I mean, you know that this is an intentional disregard for human yeah. health and life. For real.
Yeah,
that's kind of essential. They don't care. This is my point here. This is an underlying theme across the board with these hyper-technologists. It's like with all these people that want fracking, oil, nuclear, the big pharma, the big food supply people, the healthcare for profit, they view death as worth the risk. They view us getting sick and because it's part of their win-win cycle. If they make us sick, we have to go to them. They are not interested in curing. And so the industry views like, well, there's just going to have to be so many people that die so that we can have this money. If we want to have a prosperous society, people at the bottom, there's some people, and yes, some people in the middle, you know, these medical procedures aren't exactly right, and the health risks to our communities are worth the money.
I think that the military call that collateral damage.
Yeah.
Yes. Collateral damage. I think it's beyond collateral damage. It's much larger than that now. It used to be collateral damage, and now it's more widespread, and it's a problem.
Well, it's like the opioid crisis, right? They're blaming the how many times have we heard about the opioid crisis, and not one about the autoimmune deficiencies and the cancers and childhood cancer killing being the number one killer of children, childhood cancer in this country. People are not jumping up and down saying, why is that? And it's because of the chemicals and the nuclear pollution all over our country.
Well, and it's because when you're living with that and you're sick from it, your children are sick from it, your family members are sick from it, you're too exhausted
That's
to take
true.
That fight on too.
That's true. And they know that. See, this is the win-win for them. This is the serious deal. They spend a little bit of propaganda money. They get people all twisted in knots fighting over one thing or another, while they're, you know, rushing off to the bank. It's, to be honest, it is just such a shakedown of what I consider to be the American spirit. Like, in my view, Americans are pretty naive. They're pretty trustworthy in lots of ways. You know what I mean? Like, they're willing to go the extra line for people. And yet, at the same time, they go that extra line to put blinders on themselves. I saw a pie chart this morning that said we are now spending 57% of our budget on the military, the whole budget. And then everything else, the biggest percent we spent on anything else was 6%, because we have all these prioritized needs, all these different, you know, social needs, military, not military, but social, educational needs, school, governmental, you know, like how do we administer all of this? But most of it goes to the military. Now, why is that? I mean, that's ridiculous. That is an outrage, a beyond complete, that we're willing to do that when we have so, we could put those resources, like, could you imagine if we could put some of those resources into providing protocol for our doctors and helping our doctors study and understand the pollution that our people are experiencing? And we don't really have the industry either to solve the problems. That's why they don't solve it. They don't really have the answers because they're not putting money into it. I mean, I believe if they really focused on it, they could find an answer.
I try not to get worked up about those things because I want us to have a good military. But
I want us to have a good military too. But you know what? If we spent 25% of our budget, we'd still have a good military. I mean, I don't. I think that's a false equivalency. Yeah, completely. We spend more than every nation on the planet six times over, I think it is. And yet China is resting off, you know, they're going to become a good nuclear power because we want to sell uranium. There's a uranium glut. So we're selling uranium to anybody who'll buy it.
Well, what I hear when you being upset about that in the budget is I hear the number. Like, you know, however many billion, or like even when he was talking about building the wall and how much he's going to spend on the wall. If you can just say that we're in so much debt and then you can come up with a big number like that to build a wall, why can't you come up with a big number to create a health response? So that's what I hear. It's like, if you can do that, and, you know, the same way, it's some human nature thing. It's the same way the government is doing with the food stamp program. They want to decide what you can spend your money on. They think you shouldn't be spending it on this, but you should be spending it on that. Well, in your own house, you'd be like, well, I think I'd rather buy that new flat screen TV instead of fix my water tank because it's not broken yet. So, I mean, we do those things as humans on all levels. They built a brand beautiful stadium in my community, but did they fix the sewers? And now there's this sewer gas smell all the time. So why would you spend all that money on the stadium, but then your town smells like stinky sewer gas for all the people that walk to the stadium through it, smelling it, breathing it? Why did we not include that in our money plan of building the brand new, beautiful stadium? So, yeah, we just do goofy things as humans.
Well, the difference is how it's funded, probably. That's how, because one requires government funding and allocation. Like, our infrastructure, we've been talking about our failing infrastructure for over 10 years, and Congress refuses to pass a budget on it because people want to keep it as a public works, and they want to privatize it, whereas the stadium that you built is a privatized stadium. So private money got to make a profit off of it. And that, again, it's the money god. So what they're doing
but
is...
the public works still has a sewer, is what you're saying, right?
Yes. And what they want to do is get these cities and states and even the federal government to the point of desperation to where they'll say, like right now, the current proposal for the infrastructure bill is subcontract, and privatize the roads, privatize the bridges. And, you know, I mean, the problem with that is on privatized land, you can have private security forces and you can break the law because it's your land. So there's a reason why we have a government and why we have a road system, because we want to ensure the safety of all. This idea of, you know, there again, we're being used as assets on a balance sheet, and it's up to us to keep us off the balance sheet. That's what I think. Like, this idea that we can't cut back the budget in lieu of creating a health response to all these medical conditions instead of just blaming big doctors. Essentially, what you're going to be doing is blaming doctors. You're going to make doctors the bad guy. And then you're going to create a whole underground network for opioids. They need new writers. These overlords need new writers. This stuff is all easy to see.
Yeah.
I don't know. I go back through history. This is the same. It's the same pattern. You know, it's just murder, death, kill, and greed. And at what point, I think that maybe this is where humans have grown up. You and I are on the air talking about this. That's a step in the right direction, I think, Erica. You're taking action.
Well,
you have a legal case going on. What's going on with your legal case? We have about 10 minutes. Is there anything new to tell us on that?
We have our last response from our defendants. We have, over 20 defendants that are in our suit, and this is our last one, which is all the government agencies. Sorry, my dog's going to bark in the background.
That's
right. Now. Basically, the federal government has accused our complaint of being convoluted and placing an inordinate burden on the court. Well, these are all the burdensome things they've put us through for years, and we're able to, tell it in one big complaint for the court. Sorry if it's an inordinate burden. It's been an inordinate burden on us, and it's just time to show the truth, and that you do that to children, and that you do that to a family. And so that seems, easy to overcome, and that's their reason for wanting to be dismissed. And their big reason is that they are saying that they have sovereign immunity. And so I've been able to find that term sovereign immunity was brought into the courts at some point for government, and governments have put it into their own rules for suing them, but it is not anywhere a part of our Constitution. And so the good thing about being in federal court is everything is about the Constitution. And this is why I'm able to speak up, because we our founding fathers fled the sovereign. They didn't want to lose their property. They didn't want to be overtaxed again. They didn't want to be overburdened by a government. So that's why they came here and started their own community, built their own laws, framed the Constitution. The preamble was to always keep the general welfare of interest, and not the sovereign. There is no sovereign anymore. So I find it interesting that that's their main reason for dismissing. And we know that they've been acting like a sovereign, and we feel that. And you're saying that in some of the things I've heard you say even today.
Yeah, like I call them the overlords. I refer to them as the overlords. Exactly.
And so that's all we're doing, is we're just reminding our country that they've broken our laws.
Right.
And you can't be dismissed for breaking our laws. And that's, I hope that our judge is good. I can't see anything yet that tells me we have a bad judge. And I've had a couple of bad judges in the Social Security Court who are corrupt.
What are the specifics of your case that you want to win? Like, if you won, what would be the net result?
At this point, we have asked for financial relief because we need it, and we want to be in control of our own pot of money to pay for our own care, because that's what's hindering us, is the insurance going, ha ha ha, we know you need that, but too bad. We're not going to let you have it because we're not going to pay your provider, and you can't even afford to pay your provider anymore. And we've made it so that your career and your work status is so that you will not be able to pay your provider out of your pocket even. So we want to be able to get through that and have our own.
Yeah. Well, it's good because
get our property back.
The only thing they honor is money. So maybe that is what the good part is. Like, you're not just making it about all the other stuff, because the only thing that they really, really are concerned about is money.
And we are told that if the court finds for us, there will be multipliers. And if there are, then we will use that to help others in our community who have suffered in our way. And what we would like to see is, of course, the health response. And we would like there to be some criminal ramifications for the people who have acted like criminals, because they believe they are above the law. They believe they are with those who are so powerful that they can harm people, even kill people, in order to keep their budgets the way they want them, to get their big bonuses for millions and millions of dollars. And that should be criminal. If I went out and did that, started some little coalition and took money from people, I would go to jail. Why don't they get to go to jail? And just because they've made friends with people in agencies and congressmen and senators, I would still go to jail if I made friends with
people. Well, I wonder.
And still did that.
I wonder if they have like what the nuclear industry has in the Price-Anderson Act. The Price-Anderson Act indemnifies anybody from knowingly or unknowingly causing harm to our environment or human beings. So they can do whatever they want with impunity. And I wonder if the oil industry has any type of legislation to that end, which is, you know, why they do it willy-nilly. Do you know if there's anything like that?
I know they changed the Clean Air Act, and I know they changed the Clean Water Act to make them immune from meeting those things. I do know that. But I don't believe that we the people got to decide that. And I don't believe that the way that was gone about was right. But I don't think we get to just make exemptions for certain people. I know we haven't gotten those exemptions. So,
well, I can't wait to have you back on again. How much longer till your case goes to court, or what's the trajectory of what you guys have to do now?
Right now, this is the last piece that's in our court, and when it's finished, then the judge gets to decide. I've been told we would be moving to scheduling conference is what would be the next step. So unless the judge is able to rule, I would hope that the judge would give us some sort of proposal, like in the Aaron Brockovich case, because I see them gearing up. I see them bringing in all these pro-hack vice. Do you know what that is? It's basically a lawyer from another state who doesn't have rights in your state, that they're going to allow them to help the parties that are in our state to fight you. And I get several of those in the mail that, you know, they're bringing more pro-hack vices on.
You know what, Erica, we have to stop. We've got 30 seconds left. I want to thank you for joining us. You've been listening to Erica Dugan, a mom and an activist. And really, what's the little town that you're from?
Broken Arrow, Oklahoma. But I'm a Tulsan all my life, from Tulsa. And Broken Arrow is a suburb of Tulsa.
So put your courage feet on. This is how we hold America accountable and make America really great again. Talk to you guys later. Put your courage feet on. Bye. Bye, Erica. Thanks for joining us.
Bye.